Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Germany podcast. I'm Travis Dow. So today I'm going to try something a little different because I went to Wittenberg and tracked down the host of a German podcast called Angegraben, which is about archaeology. So I tracked him down and we talked about the Nebra Sky Disk and some other topics. He's kind of an authority on the topic because it was at the museum that he used to work at. So the interview itself is actually on my German feed. But, well, the interview sounds a little bit like this.
Hallo Travis, ich bin der Budler, bekannt aus Podcasts wie Angegraben.
Und
ganz neu, genau, yeah. Das geheime Kabinett.
So to get something from my English feed, I thought maybe the best way I'll go about this is summarize and translate what he said. I'll do my best. If someone has any better ideas on how to handle this in the future, I know I'll have some English topics, guests, and I'll have to figure out some way to have that content on my German feed and vice versa. The interview open on one screen and Nebra Sky Disk stuff on another screen. And I think I can put the two together and come up with some English content here too. So again, this is a rough translation of our interview and kind of a summary or paraphrased version of it. But so Der Budler basically sets the tone of the significance of the object. So the Nebra Sky Disk is about 32 centimeters in diameter, or about a foot in diameter. And it's really unique, and that has in turn kind of become a famous artifact among German museums. Quite uniquely so, actually. So we're talking a disk of bronze from about the early Bronze Age or Middle Bronze Age. So about 3,600 years old. And in the story of the Sky Disk, what's also famous is the discovery, because it was only discovered about 15 years ago, around the turn of the millennium, let's say, and it was found illegally by sort of treasure hunters. It was found near Mittelberg, and Mittelberg is kind of significant in its own right because it's always been inhabited, because it's kind of in the middle of trade routes and is just a very fertile area, and even today is known for its wine. In the area, there's a lot of burial mounds, also an Iron Age fortress. So, and that's basically the area where the Sky Disk was buried. Now, the Iron Age settlement also, of course, drew some grave robbers and, you know, sort of treasure hunter folk, you know, that kind of walk around with their metal detectors. German law strictly prohibits that. So you're not supposed to just go out treasure hunting and messing with archaeological sites. And needless to say, I mean, the reason behind this is that if people just go out and, you know, with metal detectors and start digging for stuff, obviously the context and, you know, the objects themselves get damaged, and it's just really hard to kind of put together the way it was found and you know, get the whole picture. Obviously, metal detectors only find metal, so any other objects out of wood or ceramics or anything else doesn't even show up. So, and you know, is easily overseen or just destroyed by shovels. In fact, because these treasure hunters used hammers to kind of loosen the dirt, you can actually see on the Sky Disk itself that there's one part that's dented, like right in the upper corner. In fact, at first, the treasure hunters didn't even realize what they had, so they kind of came across this huge plate, and they thought it was like a garbage can lid or something, so they just kind of threw it aside at first. But then they, luckily, I guess, found bronze swords, and so then they figured the other thing must have been something, too, and they had another look. Besides the swords, there were also a few bronze implements and arm rings, like jewelry, And so the find wasn't just of the disc. So anyways, the treasure hunters took another look. And they managed to sell the disc to a teacher. And the teacher, you know, recognized some kind of significance or its worth, but still bought it for, you know, very cheap, considering what it ended up being sold for, whatever it was, just a few thousand marks. Unfortunately, the teacher decided to clean it and basically took some steel wool to the metal and, you know, got some of that oxidation off and, you know, kind of hurt the artifact, basically, unfortunately. Now, he got together with a woman accomplice, I guess, and kind of went around to museums trying to sell it for significantly more money than he bought it for. One interesting aspect of this is that, you know, so obviously museums, several German museums must have gotten this offer, but no one actually reported it. So that's, you know, just kind of an interesting aside. One case that Der Buddler definitely knows about is when they tried to sell it to the museum in Halle, which is where he used to work. And it was that director, he was a brand new director, that realized that this is worth something and, you know, it's illegal to buy it, but we should kind of get this to safety in some way, you know, get it into the system. So the director of the museum in Halle went to the police, and they basically ended up setting up a sort of a sting operation. So what was kind of funny is that, so this happened in Basel in Switzerland, they set up the sting operation, and Mailer, the director of the museum, decided to be the buyer, and because, you know, and basically he pretended to be someone that would restore it and be interested in it, and so he got a kit from one of these restorers of all these, you know, chemicals that would identify its authenticity and that kind of thing. And but, you know, he was kind of nervous and new to it, so he ended up kind of bungling it up and with his chemicals proving that the disc was real, but the swords along with it were fakes or, you know, something like that. So, but in this first hotel meeting, basically, he was able to identify the artifacts as being genuine and then basically, you know, bought them, got them to safety, and then called the police, and the teacher and his accomplice were arrested. But at that point, it wasn't really clear where the disc actually came from. So they gave it a different town's name because that's kind of where they thought it came from. But one of the original treasure hunters, in a plea bargain to get a lighter sentence, decided to cooperate with authorities and then, you know, showed them the original spot. And they were able to kind of identify exactly where in the ground it came from and examine, you know, the surrounding area, basically. So that takes us to back to Mittelberg and Nebra. Now, regarding the piece itself, well, actually, the other stuff it was found with, so the bronze swords, for instance, were, again, dated to the early Bronze Age and had a sort of, had simple decorations in it and pretty nondescript, you know, a full-handed sword, possibly fancy enough, like, decorative-wise that they weren't really used for weapons, but more as kind of a status symbol or, you know, just to kind of show some sort of rank. But now, if you do look at the disc, it's, again, about a foot in diameter. And the most obvious thing is that it has a full circle of gold on it. So it's, you know, overall it's bronze, which is oxidized to kind of a deep green. But there's a full, pretty large gold circle on it. And then what's obviously basically a crescent-shaped moon on the other side of it, so, you know, on kind of each side. And then there's 32, 33 stars, little gold dots all around the disc. Now, the crescent moon is obviously a moon, but it's, you know, still debated whether the full circle is a full moon or sun or what. Now, what's interesting about the stars is that they're pretty evenly dispersed around the disc, but there is one kind of grouping of seven stars. And with seven stars, you kind of think of the constellation Pleiades, or is part of the constellation Taurus, but it's, you know, also known as the Seven Sisters, like that group of seven stars. And the Pleiades, you know, obviously play a big role already way back in kind of dating when to either, I can't remember if it's harvest or plant. When you could see the Pleiades, it was certain that you had to do something. And then also the one theory says that the crescent moon and the full moon could play a role, because in a moon calendar, you know, it shifts regarding to a solar calendar. And so you basically have to check if the moon is in one position, then that means you're right. If the moon is in the other position, that means it's wrong, because that means the moon calendar has shifted too far. So there was a way to tell, even on a lunar calendar that shifted, there was still a way to tell whether it was the correct season or not, based off of the Pleiades and, you know, kind of where it was and how the moon was around it. So that's one theory. But what is also certain about the disk is that it was changed, after its creation a few times, like kind of amended to or altered. For instance, on the edge of the disk, on both sides, there's a gold arc was kind of amended to the edge. So again, it's kind of, a certain angle. And basically from one side, it would be sunrise, and the other side, sunset. And the latitude about fits for it to be in the Middleburg region, or at least latitude, that you would see if you lined up the disk with the Earth, you imagined, you know, the Earth being flat, then you wouldn't see the sun rise past the golden arc on one side and set on one side, and you wouldn't see it, you know, rise on the other end, like the solstice on the other side. So you could basically see, you know, the extremes of the sun rising and setting. And like I said, those arches were brought on later, so on one side, they actually took off the stars to make room for the arch. And on the other side, they didn't do that. And so obviously they must have thought it was too much work, and they just, stuck the arch over it. And then regarding the stars, another interesting thing is that there's 32 or 33 of them, and I forget which. And it's also, that also might not be a coincidence, or it's 32 rather, 33 with the moon. And that's important because every 32 solar years are 33 lunar years, or vice versa. And then another addition to the disk is a sort of a rainbow-looking thing, or a another arc set into the bottom part of the disk. So the solstice ones are kind of really on the far edges, and then there's a third one that was added after that's just kind of in the middle and the bottom, underneath the moons. And that's kind of a mystery, because it could be a rainbow, even though it's, you know, it looks kind of like that. It has a line through it or along it. But obviously the rest of the disc is just depicting the night, so that doesn't necessarily make sense. I mean, there are moon rainbows, I suppose. But and then another interpretation could be that it's a boat, because it was part of a hoard. So who knows what the significance of, you know, it might have been added for that sake. Maybe it's a sickle, because that's important in the late Bronze Age, especially the whole sickle cult. There's a lot of big hordes with sickles, up to even dozens, hundreds, that are buried together. But it's not exactly sickle-shaped. And of course, if you turn the disc upside down, you know, it looks like a rainbow. So, you know, then it's suddenly at the top. And it's hard to say if it could be a boat. It doesn't exactly look like one. But, you know, they also played a big significance in faraway places like Babylonia, and, you know, or like, think of the river Styx. So it's an open interpretation. It's one of the theories that's floating around right now. And there's even little lines going away from the sickle-shaped thing. And even people kind of imagine that it could be oars in a boat. So it's, you know, it's not certain. But people aren't even certain if the disk is a full moon or the sun. So there's a lot of reading into this in modern times. So one needs to be careful to not kind of interpret, you know, some random theories into this disk. It is hard to say for certain what that would be. And then maybe the last addition to it was all around outside the disk, they've punctured holes all around it. So maybe the disk was tied to something, maybe a breastplate. You know, it's kind of too small for a shield, but maybe it was the center of a shield. Maybe someone just wanted a leather wrapping around the edge of it. Again, it's really hard to interpret or know what those holes were about. There's parallels in medieval times, and people had metal discs, and they would put a leather border around it and, you know, drill holes around the edge for the same reason. But again, it's, you know, it's hard to, these are thousands of years apart, so it's hard to draw parallels. It's almost too many holes around. It's really perforated a lot that it was just hung somewhere, because if you're just going to hang it somewhere, it would just take one or two holes. So it is kind of interesting. Of course, the biggest hope is that eventually we find something similar in a different part of Germany or somewhere else from that same Bronze Age culture. And then we can kind of compare the two objects. But so far, this one's just really unique. So all the theories, you know, pretty much stand alone. We don't have any other context of any other discs, which makes this find so interesting. But, you know, overall, I would just kind of warn of a word of caution to, you know, kind of theorize too much about the significance of all these symbols, because we just plain don't know. For example, there's, you know, in the same museum where this is kept, like in comparison, there's something called the sun hat that was discovered. And, you know, there's just a little kind of curled pattern in the hat, and people have this significance, or people have read the significance of every curl has some meaning, some astrological meaning, or, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, it's just kind of, it becomes absurd, all these theories that people read into this when we just plain don't know. And even the whole interpretation that the sky disk was used for practical purposes, like to see the solstices or see when exactly to plant or harvest, you know, need to see the Pleiades in a certain time. You know, that's not really true, because the farmers just all knew this. I mean, everybody could tell from experience when it was time to plant or harvest. So, you know, it's even kind of silly to even look at the obvious theory of, you know, this is clearly showing certain time of year or solstices. People knew it anyways, or it just wasn't important. Even the main theory that it was a practical kind of disc is, you know, not really necessarily true. And then, of course, it's also interesting that the disc was buried in a hoard. And in central Germany, we have all kinds of these hoards buried. And, you know, there's no human remains around the thing. So it's pretty interesting, like, why people bury hoards. Like, is this just a bank, a hiding place? Is this meant for, is it out of respect for the objects themselves? So there's all kinds of interpretations on why people even bury hoards in the first place. That's hard to say. Is it, you know, the same as like Viking or Anglo-Saxon hoards? You know, these are 1,000 years before that. So it's hard to even really say, or draw a comparison between those later Anglo-Saxon finds or Saxon finds and these, even though these are in Saxony. Just such a big time difference, it's hard to say. And then, of course, one of the theories of why people buried hoards in this age could have been was because of that volcano in somewhere on the Mediterranean, I think it was Greece, and that, you know, people said that, okay, you know, there was the whole Bronze Age event or Bronze Age collapse, but, you know, the dating of this disc is kind of off for that. It's too early or too late. So even that theory, you know, is not necessary. For some of the hoards, it might fit, but then why are the hoards after and before? So even some of the more accepted theories, you know, there's always room for debate, let's say. And also the volcano probably wouldn't have had that big of impact this far north. But it is conceivable that because of all the trade back and forth, north to south, through this part of Germany, that maybe if the Mediterranean area collapses or goes through a recession, let's say, then, you know, obviously these trade networks further north, even in Saxony, would have had less of an impact and might have also been in decline. So even with some delay, possibly. So it's hard to say. And, you know, it's been compared to even Achilles' shield, because even, you know, from Homer, even that shield also has the Pleiades on it. So, you know, but again, it's a superficial similarity or even a coincidence. But people have pointed that out, obviously. And obviously, this would be a really small shield, 1 foot in diameter. There's nothing on the back to strap it to your arm. So, you know, that's also kind of a far-fetched theory, if that even is one. But that's one of the interesting things or unique things about, or maybe challenges of archaeology as a science, is because, you know, everything starts with just theories, and it's a different sort of scientific method. I mean, you just have to be very careful and compare it to other finds, and, you know, those always change as you find more. You know, that's just how archaeology works. Just basically, over time, you get possibly, hopefully, closer and closer to the truth, and you start burying or discrediting older theories. But who knows? Maybe they just buried it as a joke, so that because they knew that 3,000 years later, some archaeologists would dig it up and be really confused. So, Anyway, that's the Sky Disk of Nebra. Now, if you want to hear more, and I should say, if you also speak German, there's a Hoaxilla podcast where they discuss hoaxes and, you know, debunk theories and that kind of thing. Really, really cool podcast. It's in German, so, you know, but then, of course, another great source for archaeology podcasts is Der Buddler. And I hope to have him on the show again. And if that happens, then obviously I'll try to translate it again. We actually did two subjects when I was in Wittenberg. So we'll talk about the I'll translate the other one soon. The thing that was brought up in Hoaxilla on that podcast, which is really cool, is or really interesting, is that you know, this disc is so rare, it's totally unique, that many people thought it was a fraud, or maybe many people thought it was a hoax or some sort of forgery. And so because of that, it was possibly researched better than just about any other German artifact. So in fact, you know, they found out that the tin comes from Cornwall, the copper from the Alps, and, you know, just because of the corrosion, they know it's absolutely, definitively genuine. So it really is as old as it looks, and people have said it is. And it really does come from that part because they were able to do soil analysis with the area. So that's the thing. It's actually, so now we really know it's genuine because it was believed to be a fake for so long. It's just one of the best researched pieces out there. They've done every kind of test they could think of, basically, which is pretty cool. So I'm kind of experimenting on how to get German interviews into English. So this was my first attempt. I hoped it wasn't too bad. I felt kind of like a translator on the fly. I'm listening to the German version on my headphones while, you know, speaking in English. Which is kind of a new skill for me, but so I hope I'll get better. It's not always easy, but yeah. So I got one more show coming up from Der Buddler, or the Digger is what that would be in English. But if you do speak German, his show is angegraben.de, and it's a German show about archaeology. Really cool stuff. And then he has a new show, Das Geheime Kabinett, which again it's in German, but I love it. One of the last episodes was on the whole history of the relic of the foreskin of Jesus and all kinds of random, you know, objects, interesting objects throughout history. And yeah, just really interesting show that, you know, doesn't topics that don't fit into his other archaeology show. So, and you know, it's really cool that Der Buddler lives in Wittenberg and he works in the Martin Luther House. So there will be, I'll kind of rely on him somewhat heavily when I talk about the beginning of the German Reformation. And that'll be really cool to have someone like that on the show when that time comes. And because of that, I might actually pull out the Reformation and other single topics. I will pull them out of the chronological order and handle them separately. The same thing that I'll do with the regions of Germany. So I just wanted to bring that up again, so you won't have to wait several years until I get to the Reformation. That'll be one of my earlier topics that I get to. I'll kind of jump ahead, go to the Reformation, and then go back to the chronological order wherever I happen to be at that point. Another one is probably anti-Semitism. That's a really interesting topic, kind of touchy and controversial, obviously, but it goes way back, and it is interesting to look at how that's changed throughout the ages. So that'll be another one that I've read quite a bit about it in history, and I'll kind of go over the history of anti-Semitism and how it changed, and obviously the impact in Germany. And I'm not going to wait all the way until either the Middle Ages or even the 20th century to get that far. You know, I'll take that out of the chronological order and deal with that separately. So, anyways, next time on the History of Germany podcast, I'll get back to the chronological order. Don't forget to check out History of Alchemy podcast or Bohemican podcast. Just go to historyofgermanypodcast.com and all the links are there. Check out the other stuff we're working on. And until next time, thank you very much.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way.
Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.